Recordings have started. Thank you.
Thank you very much, operator. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the council call on the 1st of September, 2016. And when I do the roll call, would you please acknowledge your name when it is called so that we are sure that you can be heard, because we have got 3 motions to vote on today. Thank you very much. Keith Drezek?
Present.
Donna Austin?
Here.
Ruben Skool?
Here.
James Bledel?
Here.
Volker Greiman?
I'm here.
And Volker will be standing in for the vacant, will be holding the proxy for the vacant seat in the registrar stakeholder group. Valerie Tan?
Hi, Glenn. I'm here.
Thank you. Phil Corwin?
Present.
Susan Kawaguchi?
Here.
Paul McGrady?
Good morning.
Heather Forrest?
Here, Glenn, thanks.
Tony Harris?
Here.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben? Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Here.
Here.
Marilia Maciel? Marilia Maciel? Marilia, are you on the line yet? Marilia, are you on the line yet? And in the Adobe Connect, do not see Marilia yet. Amma El-Sadar?
I'm present.
David Cake? I do not see David on the line nor in the Adobe Connect yet.
I'm present.
Sorry, David, you are. Yes. Present.
Yes.
Ed Morris?
Here, Glenn.
Stefania Millen?
Here.
Stephanie Perrin? Stephanie? Sorry, did I? I haven't seen Present. Stephanie either. You've heard seniors?
Here, Glenn.
Carlos Gutierrez?
Thank you, Glenn. I'm on the line.
Thank you, Carlos. Olivier Capin-Leblanc?
Present.
Mason Cole? I do not see Mason on the line yet. And for staff, we have David Olive, Marike Koenigs, Mary Wong, Julie Headland, Emily Barabas, David Tate, Natalie Peregrine, Mike Brennan, and myself, Glenn de Saint-Gerie. May I all remind you, please, to mute when you are not speaking, because there is noise on the line. And please say your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you so much, James, and over to you.
Thank you, Glenn. James speaking, and welcome back, everyone, from your summer breaks. I hope everyone had a nice summer, or for those of you in the South, Heather, that are getting ready to celebrate the beginning of spring. As per our standard procedures, if there are any updates to your statements of interest or any other declarations regarding your status as a counselor, please raise your hand now in the Adobe room or otherwise get my attention on the call. Okay, thanks. Seeing none, we'll move on then to the agenda, which has been posted. Yeah. Sorry, I'm still seeing that echo. I'm wondering if staff could track down which line that's occurring on and help us out. And a reminder to please mute your line if you're not speaking. Thanks. Okay, moving on to the agenda, which is posted here in the Adobe room and was circulated by Glenn. Does anyone have any updates or recommended edits to the agenda before we get started? Okay, seeing none, then I will assume that the agenda has been adopted, and we'll note the status of the meeting for our last meeting, which was on July of 2016, and I believe they were approved last week. Is that correct, Gwen? Can you confirm the status of the minutes being approved?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, they have been approved because there is the automatic process that after 10 days on the council list, without any comments, the minutes are automatically approved then. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you, Glenn. And just a procedural question, although we didn't call it a meeting, would there be any minutes or any other recorded archive of our email ballot session that was held in early August, or is just the ballot itself serve as the minutes in that case? I know it wasn't a meeting, but it was an action of the council, and I want to make sure that that's captured somewhere.
It hasn't been officially done, James, but I will do it with pleasure in making it, in sending the results to the council list. They were actually sent to the council list, but I will do it again in a more formal manner.
Thank you, Glenn. And if there are no objections from councillors, I think we should proceed to do that just to ensure that that's captured in the same location as all the other minutes of the official meetings. Okay, great. So then moving on to item number two, which is the review of our open projects and open action item list. We could have that pulled up on the screen, and there haven't been a whole lot of substantial changes to this list since it was last reviewed, but there are a couple of items of note. So this time, if I turn it over to Marika, and she can walk us through those items that require an update. Marika, if you're on the line and you don't mind, could you give us an update on those items that have changed?
Yes, thank you, James. This is Marika. Project list is on the screen. I think you actually should have also received a redlined version that was circulated to the council list, which is intended to make it easier for you to see what changes have been made compared to the previous version. So I think the main changes here is that we added an entry for the GNSO review working group, which is in the process of being formed. I know that Judy is working with several of you to identify members for this effort, and we hope to commence this group shortly. I believe we moved over the privacy and proxy accreditation issues, PDP, to the implementation phase after the board's adoption of those recommendations. And we also created a new entry for the work stream two activities of the CCWG accountability to reflect that that's now in a more working group phase, while the work stream one recommendations or work stream one efforts still remain in the implementation phase. So I think those are the main changes in regards to the other efforts. Updates have been made to reflect the current status of work, but for most of the other efforts, work is basically ongoing. So I don't know if there are any questions I can try to answer.
Thank you, Marika. Any questions from the council on the status of our projects? Quiet group this morning, Marika, so we're going to let you off easy. Okay, thank you for that update, and again, this will be circulated on the list for anyone who wants to comment perhaps outside of this call, but otherwise we'll consider this this part of our agenda closed. So if we can go back to the agenda, please. Okay, very small. Okay, next item is item number three. We have one item in our consent agenda, which is a adoption of the changed timeline for filling the role of the GNSO liaison to the GAC. If you recall, we passed a motion on this in our meeting in Helsinki. But we did have a few dates that were updated here and they're shown here on the agenda, and I'll just go ahead and walk them through for folks who don't see them. The chairs would submit a motion to council of the first choice for GAC, for liaison to the GAC on the 28th of October, and then that would be discussed, considered, and presumably adopted by the council on the 7th of November while we are in Hyderabad. So if there are no, well, I guess I should ask, are there any questions, discussions about this change? I believe this is just moving everything up one day to reflect some of the changes that we're getting ready for in relation to the schedule for ICANN 57. Yeah, thank you. Marika is pointing that out in the chat as well. So this seems fairly non-controversial. If there are no questions, then we can move to a vote to adopt the consent agenda. Okay, Glenn, would you mind conducting the vote? And let's do so by a voice acclamation vote. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Is anyone objecting to the consent agenda being passed? Are there any abstentions? Will all those in favor please say yay? Thank you very much. James, the consent agenda passes unanimously.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for keeping us on our toes with the yay. Appreciate that. Okay. Great. Moving along then to agenda item number 4, which is our first formal vote here. We have a motion to approve the recommendations from the SCI, the Standing Committee for GNSO Improvements. And this motion, I believe, is the culmination of the remaining work of the SCI as we transition this group to be folded into the effort to implement the work coming out of the GNSO review process. So the motion was made by Amr and seconded by Rubens. And if there are no objections, I could turn the floor over to Amr and have him introduce the motion. Amr, if you're on the line and are willing to do so, please go ahead.
Yes, I am on the line and perfectly willing. Thanks, James. Okay, well, this motion is not just about the SCI being disbanded and moving on to and moving its mandate to the GNSO Review Working Group. It's also about the GNSO Council adopting the recommendations coming out of the SCI on its final two projects. One is the are the new procedures for electing GNSO Council chairs and vice chairs, and the other is formalizing the procedures on submission of motions and the making of friendly amendments to those motions. The recommendations coming out of the SCI were subjected to a public comment period. A couple of comments were filed in support of the recommendations. I'm just curious, would you like me to brief you on what those recommendations are, or would you just like me to go through the resolve clauses?
I'll put that question to the council. Would anyone like a review of the recommendations themselves, or has everyone had an opportunity to review those offline? Amr, I don't see anyone jumping up and down to get a review of those, so feel free to move to the resolve clauses.
Great. Thanks, James. This is Amr again. Before I move to the resolve clauses, let me just provide some context on why these recommendations were made. Primarily, the project on the chair and vice chair elections for the GNSO Council came as a result of the elections in Dublin. And if you all recall, we did not, the council did not conclusively elect a chair at that meeting. So the council asked the SCI to look into this, and so the SCI came up with a bunch of sort of a stepwise approach to how the situation could be handled in the future. And I think it's a fairly thorough approach, taking into consideration timeline, making sure that any delay in the election of council chair and vice chair would not delay the work of council. I mean, the work that the council needs to get done. I think they're fairly straightforward and, as I said, thorough, and I'm happy to endorse them. Regarding the recommendations on the submission of motions, no changes were made to the current practice, except perhaps that sort of formalized, if we adopt this motion, it would be formalized in the operating procedures that if there is no seconder to a motion, that a motion would not be discussed during a council meeting. So that may be something. I'm not sure if we ever actually had a motion that wasn't seconded on the council agenda, but this is something to take note of, I think. So if I go through the resolve clauses now, resolved one, the GNSO council adopts the modifications to the GNSO operating procedures relating to motions and the chair, vice chair elections. Resolved clause two, the GNSO council instructs ICANN staff to post the new version of the GNSO operating procedures effective immediately upon adoption. Resolve clause three, the GNSO council thanks both present and former members of the SCI as well as policy staff and the GNSO secretariat supporting them for the work they have done on behalf of the GNSO over the years since the SCI's formation. The SCI is hereby disbanded. And if I could also comment on the last resolve clause three, this is really just a follow-up to a motion that the council adopted on its July 16th meeting. To replace the mandate of the SCI with the GNSO review working group. And I would like to also make another comment, maybe not in my capacity as an NCSG counselor, but as in my capacity as the council liaison to the SCI. There have been a couple of concerns raised regarding the council's decision to disband this committee. One was that the SCI performs an important function, and it is still not clear how this function will continue should the GNSO review working group itself eventually complete its mandate, its primary mandate of implementing the recommendations that the ICANN board adopted concerning the GNSO review by the independent examiner Westlake. Another one was that the SCI in its charter is also mandated to perform periodic reviews of the GNSO itself, and this is not strictly speaking mandated to the GNSO review working group, although I do believe the charter of this working group provides it with enough flexibility for the council to make this sort of request if it deems it necessary. But I think those are two important points, and I felt I was obligated to convey them to the council in my capacity as liaison to the committee. And I think it may also be helpful for me to attach a comment to my vote on this motion to just make sure that this is captured appropriately. And I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr, for introducing the motion, providing the context, and for relaying those sentiments from the SCI back to the council. So at this point, before we move to any kind of a vote, we open the floor for a discussion. And I see there's some discussion in the chat over the language and the text of the resolve clause three. We could certainly open the queue for a discussion of that as well. Heather, you're up first.
Thanks, James. I'm happy to kick that off in relation to the third resolve clause, since I essentially kicked it off there in the chat on the sidebar. I noticed that there's been a fair bit of discussion on the council list about the use of the word disbanded. I don't recall, I take Amr's point, that really is is an offshoot, if you like, of our earlier motion of our July meeting, July 27th, Marvin. And I don't recall if we used the word disbanded there. Even if we did, I wonder if we've got a few suggestions now in the chat. I think in light of the fact that we are thanking the SCI for its work, I think it's more appropriate to use, let's say, a word that has that sort of a tone, a positive tone, as opposed to disbanded. So I'm open to any of the suggestions here, wind up, retired, so on and so forth. And Wolf Ulrich points out that it's elsewhere in the document as well. In any event, my two cents. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. I see, I think, general agreement that perhaps the word disbanded, although we may have referenced that in the motion that was adopted in late July, that is perhaps conveying or has a negative connotation. And I see some alternatives being suggested in the chat. I don't know if we're arriving at any consensus on a positive alternative for disbanded. Phil, however, is pointing out that the word disband is used twice in whereas 6 and resolved 3. So if we fix it in one place for consistency, we should probably fix it in both places. Some of the options put out were retired and it looks like concluded. I don't know if folks have strong feelings about either one. I think, and then Mary, I think, puts out the option that we really wouldn't necessarily have to have that phrase at all. We could simply thank them for their work and leave it at that. I don't know, and perhaps I see Amr has his hand up, but I think the question to Amr and other participants on the SCI would be that would either of these terms more accurately capture the sentiment that the council has for this group and expressed in the motion adopted in late July and address the concerns or some of the some of the questions that were raised by the SCI. So I'll turn it over to Amr. Go ahead.
Thanks, James. This is Amr again. I think retired is an all right alternative to disbanded, and I have no objection to replacing disbanded with another word if it makes folks feel better. I'm not so sure about concluded, seeing that this was a standing committee. It wasn't a committee that was supposed to deliver a project and then sort of go away, similar to how GNSO working groups operate. This was a standing committee, and there was no foreseeable conclusion to its work until the topic of the GNSO review working group came up. I also note Mary's suggestion, and I think it may also be worth consideration, especially that the decision to actually disband the SCI is not being made as a result of this motion. That decision was made in the July 16th motion where the resolve clause stated that following the completion of these two projects that are up for vote this time around, that the SCI would be disbanded when these two projects are concluded. So the decision was made then, it wasn't made now, it isn't going to be made now, and we don't necessarily need to point out that we are making it now. So I think Mary's suggestion is not a bad one, but I'm perfectly happy to accommodate council members in making amendments to this motion, depending on how they see fit. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. And I think there's general agreement that Mary's suggestion, particularly for resolve clause 3, is there's some support for that, of just dropping that last sentence entirely from resolve clause 3 and ending that at over, you know, the thanks, which I think is more consistent with how we typically adopt a motion that concludes the work of a PDP working group or another similar effort. Then I guess that only leaves the loose end in whereas number 6, where we would say essentially instructed the SCI to disband / retire following the completion of the two tasks now before the council. If in fact we use the word disband in the motion that was adopted in July, then perhaps we can leave that in whereas 6 and drop the last sentence of Resolve 3. It's not entirely purging ourselves of the word disband, but at least it is consistent with the previous motion. Any thoughts on that, Amr or anyone? Okay, Amr has some agreement and indicated his agreement in the Adobe Connect. Any objections to that approach? I don't think this is necessarily controversial. Okay, I see Heather's indicated no objections in the chat. Okay, so if we could have staff, Amr, if you will take that as friendly, and Rubens as the seconder. Okay, we've got friendly on both, and we've got agreement from, I got to scroll down here, sorry, that was agreement from Paul. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. So staff is working on that. We see that they have made those changes in the motion. So if everyone could take a quick look at that while we go to Amr. Go ahead, Amr.
Thanks again, James. This is Amr. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I certainly consider this friendly. I have no problem with the amendment. But I also, again, wanted to stress the question of what the views of the council are on when the GNSO Review Working Group completes its mandate. How will the function of the SCI, as has been, which is being moved to the GNSO Review Working Group, how will that continue in the future? I think this is a question we don't necessarily need to answer now during this meeting, but it is something we should be aware of, and I believe something we should address in the coming months, just to make sure we have all our bases covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. That is an excellent point. And I think it was at least partially discussed, perhaps not comprehensively discussed, when we chartered that group. And my question is, and perhaps we can ask staff to take an action item to confirm that the charter of the successor group, the group that's implementing the GNSO review, has some task, or as the question put before it, of how to manage improvements on an ongoing basis, and whether some sort of an SCI version 2 is necessary at the conclusion of that effort. I see Marika has her hand up. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I can already confirm that that is in the charter. I think the assumption in the charter is that the first priority will now go to developing the implementation plan for the GNSO review recommendations. But of course, you know, the door is open if the council identifies any issues that it deems more urgent than dealing with the GNSO review implementation, that those can be handled by that working group. But the charter also foresees that at the point that that group actually concludes its work on implementing the GNSO review recommendations, that there will also need to be a consideration on whether that group then continues as another kind of outstanding committee to deal with potential ongoing issues relating to the GNSO operating procedures and or bylaws, or whether another mechanism needs to be created. So I think that is already foreseen in there, but as Amr said, it's something that indeed both the council and as well that working group will need to give thought to as they go through their processes and work.
Thank you, Marika. And yes, I thought that Amr's concerns sounded familiar, so I'm glad to hear that that is at least partially captured in the charter for the subsequent group. So I guess my question is, Amr, is that satisfactory to address your concerns, or if not, perhaps we can follow up a little more comprehensively after this call. But it is, as you indicated, probably outside the scope of this particular motion to do so. And I see in the chat that Amr's thanking Marika. So.
Yeah, this is Amr, James, as I am thanking Marika. But thank you all. Thanks very much for this.
Great, thanks, and thank you for your service as the liaison to the SCI, or probably should say most most recent liaison to the SCI. I know there have been others in the past, and we should thank all of those folks as well, and I think that's covered in Resolve 3. Okay, so if there are no other comments, the queue is clear, and we can move to a vote on this motion. Glenn, if you don't mind, we could proceed with a voice vote if there are no objections.
Thank you, James. All those who are not in favor of the motion, please state your name. All those who would like to abstain from the motion, please state your name. State your name. Hearing no abstentions and hearing that no one is not in favor of the motion, all those that are in favor of the motion, please say yay again.
Yay.
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 Yay again.
Great. Thanks, James. The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, Glenn.
And will be recorded as such.
Fantastic. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Amr and Rubens, for the motion. Thank you to the SCI, past and present, and presumably future. And just a time check here. I'm now 33 minutes past the hour and getting behind here on the agenda. So we'll move on to item number 5, which is our second motion of the day. It is the adoption of the IAG recommendations for who is conflicts with national law. This motion was made by myself, but it has been, I think, lingering a little bit here for context. And it was also seconded by Wolf Ulrich, so thank you, Wolf Ulrich, for that. It has been lingering a little bit here since the end of May, when we received the report from the IAG, and was discussed in our meetings in Helsinki and in July. If there are no objections, I can go ahead and introduce the motion, or at least the whereas clauses, and then we can kick off a discussion. So the motion is resolved. The GNSO Council has reviewed the IAG final report, and there's a link, and concludes the proposed modifications to the procedure conforms to the intent of the original policy recommendations. And as such, the GNSO Council confirms its non-objection to the modification being implemented by GDD staff as outlined in Appendix 1, and there's another link, as soon as practically feasible. Resolve 2, the GNSO Council recommends as soon as the modification has been implemented, all affected parties are informed accordingly. Resolve 3, furthermore, the GNSO Council requests that ICANN staff monitor the implementation of the modified procedure to determine whether the modification addresses the issues identified by the IAG final report and report back accordingly. And finally, Resolve 4, the GNSO Council thanks the IAG for its work and notes on the minority views included in the final report. The GNSO Council requests that these are shared with the Next Generation Registration Directory Services PDP Working Group, as the broader who is issues raised in these views are expected to be dealt with in that PDP. Those are the resolve clauses for this motion, and then if there are any questions or discussions now, we can take a cue. And first up is Volker.
Thank you, James. And I regret having to do this, but registrars have reviewed the proposal contained in the IAG final report carefully, and we've come to the conclusion that the proposed modifications to the procedure is not helpful or desirable, as it would not improve the ability of contracted parties to comply with local law. Adding a trigger that is, in fact, impossible to use in many jurisdictions means, in our view, that the IAG has failed in its task assigned to them by this council, and therefore this motion should not pass on that ground alone. The original GNSO recommendation, as adopted by the IAG board back in 2006, clearly references that a contracted party needs to clearly demonstrate such conflict, but does not specify at that time which form such demonstration would have to take. This, correctly implemented, would give contracted parties a much-needed amount of flexibility to provide such demonstration prior to being faced with enforcement action by either ICANN staff, ICANN compliance, or local privacy law enforcement. The originally proposed procedure goals are detailed in the final report, so I will not quote them here, but suffice it to say that the proposed new trigger does not meet the goals of the original recommendation. The proposed new procedure is too narrow and too restrictive to be useful, and adopting it at this time would limit the options of contracted parties to discuss and negotiate solutions with ICANN, where local laws prevent them from following policies or contractual obligations. While the proposed trigger is broader than the trigger in the current procedure, it is a trigger that, when taken to the real world, is simply not effective, as it assumes a role for certain agencies or parties that these agencies or parties do not have or will not take on. The alternative trigger is essentially a trap for contracted parties, as it requires them to contact an agency primarily tasked with finding and penalizing violations of privacy laws and notifying them of a potential violation, essentially triggering the start of an enforcement action against the requester. The new trigger is therefore further exposing contracted parties to a risk that it was supposed to remove. This simply will not do, especially since a workable trigger process is already in place for example, for the data retention specification of the 2013 RAA, which would recommend and satisfy the requirements of most contracted parties. We propose that this council should refer this back to the IIG and request that they provide a recommendation that will prove useful in the real world and fully meets the expectation of the goals outlined in the original recommendation. We recognize that more workable trigger proposals have been discussed, but were blocked by parties that would not even be affected directly by such conflicts. The arguments against those triggers were not convincing, as the use of a trigger mechanism in itself does not predicate the outcome of the process. We therefore propose that these triggers be revisited by the group with the understanding that the use of a trigger does not automatically result in ICANN dispensing the contracted parties affected from their responsibilities, but rather as the initiation of a process where based on a trigger mechanism, further review is initiated and necessary by ICANN. That's my statement.
Thank you, Volker. Next in the queue, I have Heather.
Thanks, James. I suppose that Volker's comments perhaps take some of the joy out of what I'm about to say. What I intended to remark was to say that the IPC was very pleased to see the Registry Stakeholder Group put this motion forward in the first place. I do know that, and happily, let's say, aware of the fact that at the end of our last meeting, I posted a comment on the list to say that, you know, I was fairly disappointed, speaking as an individual, not on behalf of the IPC, but I was fairly disappointed as a councillor in the way that our previous discussion on this motion went, in that it focused on the substance and not on the question at hand and the precise wording, really, of the question before us. And it seems that we're right back in that same position again. I note Volker's comments that the outcome of the IAG, the proposal, was, quote, not helpful or desirable. And that's not the precise wording of the motion. The motion asks us to confirm whether the proposal conforms to the intent of the original policy recommendations. So I'd be very grateful if Volker or James yourself could offer some comments to that specific point. Let's make sure we vote on the motion that's in front of us, which is whether this thing conforms to the intent of the original policy recommendations. Thank you.
So Volker, thank you, Heather. Volker has rejoined the queue, but he is behind Marilia. So Marilia, do you mind if I go with Volker first so he can respond to Heather's question? Oh, thank you, Marilia. Volker, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, James, and thank you, Heather, for asking the question. I think I and the most registrars that have responded on our mailing list to this proposed motion have felt that it does not conform to what they have been asked to do, essentially because the trigger that is proposed, when used, exposes the registrar to additional risk. Therefore, the proposed trigger or the motion that we have here does not conform to the original proposal and the original intent of the original of the original motion, because it does not in any way provide a new way or a new means to trigger the mechanism to allow contracted parties not to be in a situation where they would have to violate local law. As I said, this looks like a trap that would trigger enforcement action by local law enforcement agencies rather than a mechanism that would allow registrars to or registries to initiate a process within ICANN to have certain requirements looked at from the perspective of local law requirements.
Thank you, Volker, for that response. Next up is Marilia. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, James. This is Marilia speaking. Yesterday, the MCSG held a monthly policy call, and as you can imagine, this was one of the topics that we discussed the most in our call yesterday. And I think that it is the general feeling between our counselors that in spite of the best efforts counted IEG, the policy proposed, the report falls short in addressing the issues concerning conflicts between WHOIS and privacy law. So in our opinion, we need to have a more thorough consideration of the problems, and we need perhaps to revise the GNSO policy itself on the matter. MCSG counselors, as you know, they do not have a directed vote, but those that vote for this motion, for the approval of this motion, do so on the expectation that this aspect of the policy will be reviewed soon, either in ongoing processes or in processes to be created on this regard. And I personally think that the suggestion made to refer this back to the AAG is not a bad suggestion at all. We also have an additional concern, which is related to the role of the GAC in the process that the AAG created for the alternative trigger. The report mentions that the country where the national law has been flagged to be in conflict with WHOIS should be consulted in the process, and it's not clear from the report what will be the weight of the GAC member opinion on this issue. As we know, the data protection authorities nationally, they work in a way that is independent of national governments, and sometimes they have the responsibility to oversee branches of the government, and this policy may upset the balance that exists on the national level and the independence of data protection authorities. Because of that, it's our opinion that if this report gets approved, the GNSO should follow up on the implementation of these suggestions to make sure that if GAC is supposed to give an opinion, this opinion is not something that will wait on the process in terms of the final decision that will be made. There will be an actor to be consulted, but that consultation will be merely advisory. Having said that, this is what we discussed yesterday, but as I mentioned, our councillors do not have a directed vote on the issue, but we wanted, no matter the outcome of the proposal, the motion, to express our concerns on that. Thank you, James.
Thank you, Marilia, and good point. I noticed there is a queue with Donna and Paul, but I have a question for staff. Marilia and Volker both referenced referring this work back to the IAG, but as Mary pointed out in the chat, well, I'll just go ahead and come clean. I am not clear on the status of the IAG, if this group can, still exists, and whether or not there is still an IEG to refer this work back to, or whether it would need to be rechartered or reconstituted in some way, or if we would have to create or charter a separate group. Up to and including a PDP to address this issue, although that seems just off the cuff, that seems redundant given that we have a PDP ongoing that is looking at some of these in the context of an RDF. So I just would put the question on the table, and I don't mean to hijack the queue, but two speakers have now referred or made reference to sending this back to the IAG, and I don't know how that would work. But we'll go next then to Donna. Donna?
Thanks, James. Donna Austin. So from a registry stakeholder group perspective, we largely support Volker's statement. We do consider the recommendation is...
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you.
So I just wanted to put on record that the registry stakeholder group does support the statement that's been read by Volker. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. I have Paul.
Paul McGrady for the record. So I guess my questions are based on the fact that at least for another month or two, I'm still a freshman counselor. How do we deal with situations like this where we have essentially, I assume this reached us because there was a consensus among the group that did the work, and that group was, I again assume, broadly representative, and you know, contracted parties were involved, non-contracted parties were involved in the process. How do we, I feel hesitant to essentially overturn consensus because now we don't like it, right? Is this a normal thing? Do we do that a lot? Do we veto consensus even when a broad group of the community was involved in bringing this to us? I just would like to understand how we are how this is on the table. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. It's a good question, and I think I'm not really sure if I'm in a position to answer it specifically. From my perspective, I think that the IAG is a bit of a weird duck because it is, in many respects, it's not a PDP, but it is in many aspects operating similar to a PDP. And so I think that is, I think that's actually in some ways the source of the friction here, is that it is bounding up against policy, which would be out of scope for anything but a PDP. So I think that's potentially part of the confusion. But I think that in this particular case, I would also note that I think the IAG, from my understanding, suffered from a lack of participation from some groups. And I don't mean to call those groups out, but the reality is what it is, and that some of the groups did not fully engage in that effort. I don't know if any other counselors want to weigh in specifically on Paul's question, but I have a couple of other folks in the queue. Next up is Olivier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking, and I'll be speaking here on behalf of the ALAC. Although the ALAC hasn't conducted formal discussions or, in fact, a formal vote on this topic, there has been a discussion or several informal discussions going on within the ALAC and in the at-large community. And we, the voices that have been heard broadly support the concerns that were expressed by Volker early on today in the call. So that's the position at the moment, but we are certainly eager to see where the discussion takes place on this call. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Next up is Stephanie.
Thanks very much, James. Stephanie Perrin for the record, and I'll spare everybody a lengthy rant because I think my views are quite clear. I wrote what I thought was a dissent that is called an appendix and the whole construction of the who is ethics of law policy strikes me as one of the few people around that has actually worked in a reasonably senior position in a data protection office as absolutely absurd, and exposes the registrars in particular to multiple risks, that legal risks that don't strike me as fair or reasonable, and the whole idea that you would not be able to comply with law without this triggering mechanism and some kind of authority from a data protection commissioner that in many cases is not able to give you such a letter just struck me as absurd. So I'm actually speaking to respond to Paul's use of the word consensus. This was a very fractious group, and we were constrained and bound by the remit of the particular group. And so I think it's very difficult to call that consensus. Most of the people who participated were not in support of this, and it was, I would say, a workaround. Now, I leave the registrars to speak for themselves, but certainly there were quite a few of us saying this is nonsense, we should review the policy. So, and unfortunately, and as Maria has given you an excellent summary of our discussion is basically we are stuck with a policy that needs to be revised because it doesn't make any sense. We have not done an active consultation with the data commissioners who we're looking for a trigger from. And the RDS, even to an optimal years to get to the policy revision that is required. So tossing it back to the IAG to have another round of vigorous discussion, let's put it that way, just doesn't strike me as useful. And I see in the chat Heather is saying the question that I'm not the one the IAG was asked to deal with. That is the problem. The IAG was asked to figure out whether there is another trigger that would work better than the no man's land that the registrars have found themselves in, and the answer is this doesn't work. We heard it from Volker. So tossing it back to the IAG again strikes me as possibly not too useful, and I wonder if some of us who are busy working on the RDS have time to pour into the IAG, because that process requires participation, or we'll get something equally unuseful out the other end. So I don't know whether I'm clarifying here, except that I would vigorously object to calling the conclusion we reached a real consensus. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie, for those comments. I have Volker and Paul. Volker?
Yes, thank you, James. And I would like to thank Paul for his comment, because I'm very aware that this is an interesting situation that we are currently proposing here. Normally, I would say that a consensus call would have to be respected. However, the council is the guardian of the process, and if we feel that even though the working group or the IAG has, in this case, has reached consensus, but on a matter that it wasn't tasked with, or the consensus does not meet the requirements of the task that was put before it, then we should be able, and I think we do have the right, to refer it back to them and tell them you didn't do your job correct because you missed certain points, certain interpretations, misinterpreted certain things that were part of your mission, and you didn't clearly delineate or work out or even left to the side. I think that is part of our role as the GNSO Council. And while it is a rare thing that we do that, and I can't remember one situation where we did that during my tenure as a councillor, I think that is a tool that, while best used rarely, can be used in situations where it should be used. As a second thing, like I said in my presentation, I think we should make absolutely certain that when this goes back to the IAG, we are very clear that we would like to see that the IAG makes sure that the proposed procedures conform to the intent of the original policy recommendations. And that intent is to allow contracted parties to negotiate with ICANN, to present problems to ICANN, and find a solution in cases where policy conflicts with local law. And that has to be workable to be in conform, to conform to the intent of the original policy recommendation. If it doesn't work, it does not conform to the intent, and it should be referred back again and again. Thank you.
Thank you, Volker. Paul?
Paul McGrady. So I guess I'm a little concerned about the idea of there something being sent to us, presumably following a consensus call, and then we as a council deciding that there wasn't consensus because people who are unhappy with the outcome says there wasn't consensus, right? That to me seems like a freeway of an exception where anything that is unpopular, even though consensus was reached in the process, gets off-ramped. And so I guess I'm not persuaded by that. I'm also not heartened. In some respects, we're actually talking about a motion that's not been made because there's no motion in front of us to send it back. So we should be a little bit careful. But even if that motion had been made, and that was what we were really discussing instead of the motion that was actually made, it doesn't sound like the IAG, you know, was terribly, you know, if it really was as fractious as people say it was, I don't know why sending it back there would be the thing to do. Anyways, especially with the, you know, PDP on this topic is essentially already up and running. So, so again, I guess I just express my hesitancy about the council interposing its collective views, overturning consensus when consensus has been reached by an appropriate working group. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Next is Stephanie.
Sorry, that was an old hand, James.
Okay. Then next is Donna, and then we should probably try to bring this in for some kind of a landing, folks. Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Donna Austin. So I just want to make the point that if this, and, you know, Paul, we can argue all day about consensus and, you know, whether the group met that or not, but the reality is that this is, the solution is unworkable. And one of the challenges is if this gets voted up, right, so we argue about whether the intent of the motion is that the recommendation is consistent with the policy. The challenge here is that if the council votes this up and agrees to the additional trigger, which the contractor party's house knows is unworkable, then ICANN relies on that trigger, and the contractor party's house is in no position to negotiate, might be the wrong word, but to find an alternate way to address this conflict with national laws. So that's my real concern here. What we're doing, if the council votes this up, is that we put the contractor party's house in a position where staff are going to say, no, you have to use this trigger because that's what the consensus was of the IAG, and that's the only one available to you. So that puts the registries and registrars into boxes us into a corner that we can't necessarily get out of. So that's my real concern here. This is unworkable. So we don't, you know, from our perspective, we don't want to vote this up because it's going to box us into a corner that we can't get out of. So we'd rather acknowledge that the recommendation is unworkable, and let's see if we can, you know, find a way out of this, because ICANN staff will rely on this trigger, and that is a really bad outcome for the contracted party's health. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Donna. Thank you to Volker and Stephanie, Paul and Heather, and I'm sure I've forgotten someone. For all speakers for weighing in on this, this is a challenging issue. This is bending a lot of our processes by the way it's come about, and it is, and I'll just go ahead and offer some color commentary, it is taking a broken process and attempting to fix it, but as we're hearing from some, it's there are concerns that that's not effective. But just from the perspective of process here from the council, we need to find a path forward. Now, at this stage, we could certainly submit the motion for a vote and let the cards fall where they may. Have heard reference to sending this back to the IAG. I think that opens up a number of questions as well. For example, does the IAG still exist, or would it need to be reconstituted, and would that actually be a useful exercise? I'm happy to defer the motion, but unfortunately that only buys us some time, and then it becomes we're right back in this situation here in about a month. I'm also happy to withdraw the motion, and I will state for the record that I made this motion because our deadline was approaching, and I took to heart Heather's concerns that this was flopping around on the deck and had not seen any motion movement since our discussion of it upon receiving the report in May, and it was just kind of sitting in limbo there. Maybe that was premature on my part, but I certainly wanted to light a fire and kind of kick this thing in the pants and get some movement on this topic and get it in front of the council. If I withdraw the motion, I should note procedurally that I think that that makes the seconder, Wolf Ulrich, the maker of the motion, and that anyone else could then come and second the motion, and then it would still be unwithdrawn. So it would essentially take a both of us to agree to withdraw the motion, and then of course that would again leave open the question of where do we go from here with this IAG report and this issue of who is conflicts with national law. So I am open to suggestions here. Don't want to drive a train off a cliff if you don't have to, but neither do you want to build the tracks to go that way inevitably. And just trying to catch up on the chat here a little bit because there's the flurry of posts going by and comments. So questions, comments, suggestions? All right, Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, James. This is Amr. I apologize. I was dropped off the call for a few minutes, and I might have missed some of the discussion, but I'm not clear on why the motion is being withdrawn now instead of the council voting on it and taking action, whether the motion passes or fails. Would you mind clarifying this one more time, James, and apologies again?
Well, that's simply one of the options, Amr. We haven't made any determination either way. I'm offering to withdraw the motion that I made in an effort to get some movement and some direction on this issue. If it is needs some more time, some more discussion, then I'm happy to withdraw it on the assumption and the condition that some of the folks who are raising these comments and concerns today would meet in the interim to discuss whether, if and when this is resubmitted and try to work on some language that is acceptable rather than performing surgery and trying to close these gaps that we're hearing on the council, trying to bridge these differences with amendments to the language. I'm offering to withdraw it and essentially send this for rework. However, if that's not the course that the council would like to pursue at this time, then we can simply move forward with the vote. But neither course has been decided yet, Amr. Thanks. Susan?
So I understand, the concern, and this is a difficult issue, But I'm also very concerned that we're sort of setting a precedent that, you know, if we just go ahead and vote, and I'm assuming this would be voted down, so that it would be a no vote, would win on this motion at this point, that, you know, we've asked some group in the community, maybe it's not a PDP, but to take the time to work at this. Obviously, there was some level of consensus, and maybe understanding that level would help us in our work to decide on what to do going forward. But, you know, and then we sort of unilaterally say, nope, you got it wrong, go back. In some ways, that's very responsible of the GNSO Council. But on the other hand, you know, if we haven't all spent time on this group and really delved into this, then do we really know that that's true? We have a lot of contentious PDPs in place right now, and I would be very concerned if this would be, you know, this happens routinely with recommendations that from PDPs. So I, to me, it would be better to maybe get a little bit more information, defer this one more meeting, and or even if we had to defer it to Hyderabad, and, you know, maybe can we talk to the IAG and get a better idea of, you know, the level of consensus on this group.
Thanks, Susan. Good thoughts. And I think that in some ways your comments align with the concerns raised by Paul. So I think the four, oh, and just a note that I don't know that we have a mechanism to defer to Hyderabad. If we defer the motion, it will come up on our next call, which is before Hyderabad, with no opportunity to defer. So I think our two choices, or our two viable choices, are to for me to withdraw the motion, which is essentially saying we need more time. We need to have some discussions either with the IAG to go over the report or convene some of the stakeholder groups and constituencies that are raising these concerns here in the council. So withdrawal equals more time. We put it to a vote, and I think you're correct. It sounds like it will not pass. That is not necessarily the end of the line, however, as I think even the folks who have indicated that their stakeholder groups will not allow them to vote or have directed them to vote no, I think that voting no in some ways is a clean slate and essentially says that we'll take the IAG as informative, its report as informing future work, but this is not the route that we want to go and that we need to look at this, tackling this a different way, perhaps through a PDP. So I think that's kind of how I'm, please weigh in if you feel like I'm off track here, but I feel like withdrawing the motion says we need more time, but we think we can salvage this, and putting the motion to a vote, presuming that it does not pass, is essentially saying we need to take a fresh look at this. It doesn't necessarily terminate the work. It just terminates this avenue for the issue. And that's just my high-level view on this, and I would welcome corrections, particularly from staff, if I'm going coloring too far outside the lines. I see that the queue is clear, and I would note that a withdrawal means that the motion can be reintroduced either at our next meeting or at Hyderabad or thereafter or never. It really essentially is an undo for the submission. I don't see anyone lined up, so why don't I go ahead and propose to this group that I withdraw the motion. And if that is agreeable to Wolf Ulrich, then we will take this off the table, off of our agenda. That does leave it as a potential to be resubmitted. and either in its current form or in some other form. And I would ask then, as an action item, that we convene a group of counselors and or representatives from the leadership of the different stakeholder groups to understand the path forward on this and whether or not, if and when, this needs to be reintroduced. And I see Wolf Ulrich is agreeing with the withdrawal. Thank you for your concurrence on that. Wolf Ulrich? Okay, well, best of intentions. What is the saying? No good intention goes unpunished. So it's I take full responsibility, by the way, for the record, for introducing this motion in advance of the deadline. I knew it was in trouble from the minute it was submitted, but the withdrawal, I take responsibility for that. So then moving to Jen, I'm sorry, go ahead, Paul.
Paul McGrady for the record. James, I just wanted to say no apologies are necessary. I thought today's discussion on this was helpful, and so I think sometimes things like this don't make it in the first time around. Second time around. So that I just wanted to say thanks for putting it forward and giving us an opportunity to talk through it. I've certainly learned a lot from it, and I think others probably have too. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. And I really hope that we can, and I don't mean to call anybody out, but I note that we have really helpful, constructive, and spirited conversations on this during council meetings, and I would hope that we could do some of that in the interim between council meetings. I think that would be maybe the best way to kind of move this train down the tracks a little bit. So, but thank you, Paul. Good thoughts. And to everyone who contributed in the conversation, I guess my final parting thought is we need more of the exchange that we just had. More of that, I think, will benefit this issue. Okay, then that was the easy stuff, and we are 13 minutes into our second hour. So let's move on to agenda item number 6, which is a discussion. And this discussion, and I'll raise this as well as I'll turn it over to Paul as well to add his thoughts, but we received a letter from Chairman Crocker, and this was received in early August when we were all on our break, and this was regarding the status of the subsequent rounds of new GTLD applications, and the letter's posted there in Adobe. Thank you, staff, for putting that up. But I noted in sending this to the council that the board is asking us a specific question here, which is that it would be helpful to understand, and I'm just trying to read here from the letter, it would be helpful to understand whether the GNSO believes that the entirety of the current subsequent procedures PDP must be completed prior to advancing a new application process under the current policy recommendation. And that they have asked us to review this question, and of course we would review this with the leadership of that PDP. Just procedurally, there was a board workshop upcoming, so there was some question of whether or not the board was seeking an immediate answer to that question in advance of their workshop, so that it could be a subject of those discussions. I think we've since learned that this is not expected to be addressed during that event. However, I believe it is the desire of the board to have this as part of the community discussions in Hyderabad. So there is the boundaries. We don't necessarily have to answer the question in this call or at this meeting, but we certainly need to be working on our response to the board's questions to have them ready for well in advance of Hyderabad so that they can be posted and reviewed by the community and then everyone can come to India prepared to discuss these issues. So with that said, I note that Paul McGrady is the liaison to that subsequent issues PDP. I don't know if Paul, if you had some good posts on the council list regarding an approach on this. I think it was Phil also had some thoughts as well. So I would open this up for council discussion on both the substance of the letter itself and the process and approach that we as a council and working, of course, with the PDP and the larger community can use to formulate our response. So with that, I see Phil up first. Phil, go ahead.
Oh, this is Phil. I don't want to preempt Paul. I just wanted to get in the queue. So if Paul has something to say, I defer to him.
Thanks, Phil. This is Paul McGrady. So I don't know that I have much to say other than the co-chairs of the subsequent procedure working group are very willing and interested in being a part of this process. I think that we can either have them on our next council call briefly or find some other mechanism to hear from them, or we could put questions to them in writing about where they are in terms of you know, timing on some of these issues. The work of that group is moving along, but there are still some very basic issues that are being considered, such as, you know, will subsequent procedures be rounds? Will they be perpetually open? Application periods? Will there be something else entirely? And so, you know, I would like to give them the opportunity to sort of do their best to predict what the future will look like and how quickly it will look that way, but with the caveat that you know, we've essentially just gotten started with this. I'm very thankful to Phil for putting forward the views of the BC, and I think going back and actively encouraging other constituencies and stakeholder groups to do something similar would help inform the discussion as well. And so with that, I will turn it over to Phil to talk a bit as well about the BC position. And specifically, Phil, you mentioned in the chat that you thought the question was too narrow, and I'm curious to hear more about that. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. And this is Phil for the record. Yeah, within the BC, I raised this issue when we first got the letter, and we've had a rather robust discussion within the business constituency, both during our last members' meeting a week or two ago, and also by email exchanges. Number one, the consensus position we've seen in the BC is that there are, in fact, three ongoing processes that should be considered before finalizing the details of the next round, whether it's going to be a discrete round or a permanently open application window. And that's not just the work of the subsequent procedures PDP, but the work of the Rights Protection Mechanism Review PDP, which is completely related to and we're required to coordinate with the subsequent procedures PDP. It's clear that both of them are related to the next round, and the issue of whether the new TLD RPMs are working as effectively as would be desired is very important to BC members. I'm sure it's important to other constituency groups within the council. And then we've got the review team on consumer choice, competition, and trust under the AOC, and that's also related to this. As to the practicalities of doing what the board has requested, which seems to be whether we could have a work stream one and two approach similar to what the accountability CCWG has had, dividing issues between those that must be concluded prior to a next round and those which can be tinkered with after that process begins. Speaking only for myself now as one of the co-chairs of the RPM working group, I don't see any practical way we could divide up our work in that manner. That's not the way we've set forth a work schedule. We are adhering to our work schedule so far. We're on time, and we project being finished with our work and putting out and starting on a draft report and recommendations mid-2017, summer 2017, and having that that draft report and recommendations out next fall, and concluded and recommendations to the board by the end of 2017. So that's the timetable we're looking at. I don't know how the CCTRT could do a work stream one or two. I leave it to the subsequent procedures PDP to speak to that issue. But it would seem strange to have a working group on subsequent procedures and have a subsequent round before it's completed its work. Having said all that, the BC has no desire to unnecessarily delay a next round. We are aware that there are businesses which would like to submit .brand applications as soon as possible. We don't think it's probably likely that we could get just a .brand round that excludes IDNs and communities and general applications. So, and I guess we could look at whether all the work has to be done and completed and adopted and a board vote up or down on it before a subsequent round is open. But I think the BC position would be that whatever modifications of procedures and RPMs would have to be in place before any new TLDs in a second round actually were delegated and opened for business. But again, we've got a PDP on procedures, and how do you start new round procedures before their work is done? So I'll stop there. I hope that's helpful. But the one very clear thing that I hope will emerge is that the BC believes that the board's question about the subsequent procedures PDP is too narrow, that we need to consider the RPM review PDP and the review team on consumer choice, competition, and trust as a kind of trifecta to be considered in advance of a subsequent round. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil, for that comprehensive response from the BC. I see a queue coming up here, but I just wanted to note that the language of the letter does contain a qualifier that says, for example, assuming all other review activities are completed. And so I took that to mean the CCT review team. But I think it is an open question of whether the board intended to include the reviews on the RPMs as part of the as part of the other PDP, which would fall under the GNSO's remit in that qualifier. So I think that's a good point, and I thank you for identifying those dependencies and prerequisites that are also attached to subsequent procedures. Next up is Olivier.
Thanks very much, James. Olivier Capon-Leblanc speaking, and on behalf of the ALAC on this topic. The ALAC new GTLD working group has been discussing this and has looked at the correspondence and after some discussion has conducted a straw poll of its members to find out where they stood. The response was unanimous in saying that, and I'll just read it from the section there, do not start the process of a subsequent round until all necessary reviews have been completed and their reports and recommendations have been fully considered by the ICANN community and board. This includes not just the subsequent procedures PDP referenced in Chairman Crocker letter, but also the RPM review PDP and the consumer choice, competition, and trust review mandated by the affirmation of commitments. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Olivier, and thank you for contributing the ALAC's, or at least the general sense of the ALAC. I try to avoid phrases like temperature of the room, but the general sense of the ALAC on this particular question. Next up is Donna. Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Donna Austin. So just from a registry stakeholder group point of view, subsequent procedures PDP sent around a list of questions for the various SOSACs to respond to, which the registry stakeholder group did. But we also had an additional or highlighted an additional area that we thought was important, and that was for the subsequent PDP working group to kind of pass its work to understand what would require policy work, what's implementation, and how is it possible to streamline that to do it in the in the fastest way possible. Fastest isn't the best use of the word, but to streamline the process to make it more efficient. Some of you that may have been in Helsinki might have heard Jordan Buchanan suggest that, you know, we could kick off a second round or additional rounds now, given the existing process that we have. Now, I'll leave it up to everybody else to disagree with that. But I would like to mention that the registry stakeholder group has actually had a discussion with the board during interactions on Constituency Day around this for, I don't know, the last maybe 3 to 4 meetings. And what, and the reason being that what we would like to see is I think it's really important that there is a common understanding of what has to happen before we can kick off any subsequent procedures. But we also need to be aware that, you know, that the current timeline, I think ACRM has said that 2020 is the likely time frame for starting a next round. But, you know, that's an 8-year gap between when the 2012 round started and initiating, you know, another process. So how do we balance what needs to be done with ensuring that we get a reasonable timeline in there to any future rounds, understanding that there is demand already for new GTLDs, as Phil referenced, certainly coming from some brands. And, you know, there's figures being thrown out already that, you know, the next round will result in, you know, 10,000 applications. So I think Paul made the comment earlier that that puts a pretty big administrative burden on ICANN. So I think, you know, when we think about this request, we should also think about it from a GNSO Council perspective. What's our obligation to try to make sure that these things are done in an efficient and timely manner? So once we understand what the, you know, what needs to be done in order to get to that step to initiate a next process, what do we think is a reasonable time frame to do that in? Because I think, you know, really anything beyond 2020 is untenable. So I think there's an obligation on us to try to understand what needs to be done, but to try to identify or put a line under it in terms of what timeline are we aiming to as well. So I'd just like to put that on the table, that I think we need to consider that. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. Tony is up next.
Yes, I'd like to refer to the place in the letter where it says that the board is looking for a sense of whether a future application process could proceed while policy work continues, et cetera, or that a set of critical issues should be identified to be addressed prior to a new application process. We haven't finished discussing this in our constituency in the ISPCP, but I think we can possibly point out the following things. I think we would definitely support the set of critical issues being identified up front, because if technical problems arise, as we've seen with what the Universal Acceptance Steering Group is dealing with right now, that directly impacts the operations of ISPs and our call centers and the complaints that we get. Secondly, I think that for applicants who are going to invest and get involved in getting an application through, perhaps not a big brand, that's not, that would probably wouldn't worry them, but other types of applications, I think they need clarity on things that have gone wrong or haven't, let's say, prospered in the first round that we've had in 2012. Are those things being rectified? Is there, are there mechanisms to improve the roadblocks that many applicants have found? I'm one of them. And I think also this would serve to help people decide on whether they want to apply or not for a new GTLD. And I don't see how that can be something which is worked on post-application process and iteratively applied. It doesn't sort of sound right. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. I have, just to go through the queue here, I have Susan, and then Paul, and then I put myself in the queue here because we probably need to close down the discussion here. I'm certainly aware that this will be a topic that will continue after this call, but we need to be respectful for our agenda as well. So, Susan, you're up next.
Thanks, James. This is Susan Kawaguchi for the record. So I do think as the GNSO Council, to echo Donna, that we have a responsibility to really look at this and figure out what needs to be done. But, you know, there's so much more involved to this than the three working groups or review teams that, you know, have been mentioned, in my opinion. You know, we have an SSR review team coming up that will be seated soon, and then in a few more months, the Who Is review team. You know, we're already asking a lot of the community, and I know this has been a constant issue for the last year at least. You know, maybe once IANA transition is done, then, you know, the community will have more bandwidth. But so we have a lot going on, and I don't know how focused we really are on the burden this would put on ICANN. Personally, from a Facebook point of view, you know, we are seeing serious issues with compliance and abuse in the new GTLDs. There's patterns of abuse that are now, you know, you can see a pattern instead of it just being, okay, this is a one-off. Now we're seeing patterns of abuse with some registries, and then, but, you know, how to work with ICANN compliance and rectify that is, in my opinion, almost non-existent. There's no availability of solutions, I guess. And so, I mean, there's a lot of issues out there that we're starting to really see the pattern. We need to make sure that this is a secure and stable environment. And adding 10,000, you know, if that's really, I've heard that number several times, you know, adding that to ICANN's workload is, and the results we're getting now, I'm really skeptical in their ability to handle it.
Thanks, Susan. Okay, thank you. Susan, were you done, or were you just waiting for staff to
clear that? No, that was it. I'm done.
Oh, okay. All right. There was some noise on the line. I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to finish your thoughts there. Thank you. Excellent comments. Paul, you're up next.
Thanks, Paul McGrady. I tried to raise this on the list, and I don't think I did an artful job. I'm trying to understand what the motivation is for this letter in the first place, right? I asked if it was about application fees, and I think the list response was essentially no, it's not about money. And then I'm kind of wondering, is the board under pressure from somebody to move this along more quickly than it looks like it's going to be moved? Is this is the letter purely for their informational and planning purpose? It's not designed to make anybody feel like we need to move faster. Does anybody have any insight into why the letter came in the first place? I wanted, you know, obviously we want to be responsive to the board, but I'd also like to understand the motivation for the letter, so that we, you know, so that we're responsive and, you know, in the most respectful way we can be, right? Because clearly this is an important enough issue for, you know, Dr. Crocker to send the note. So any insight on that would be very welcome. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. I agree it would be helpful to understand if they were trying to address some specific external pressure or something perhaps that is coming through the board. I would suspect, although I have nothing to back this up, is that it's probably a mixture of motivations. There might not be one single motivator, but we could certainly consider whether that is something that we could include in our response is to ask them in our response if there's something in particular that they are that is driving this concern or that is prompting this inquiry. And perhaps even put out feelers and see if we can get ahead of that prior to our response. Tony, is that an old hand, or I wanted to make sure the queue was clear before I try to summarize our discussion here and move us through our agenda. I don't know if Tony's still on the line. Okay, so I'm just trying to summarize here what, because I think we've captured a number of good points here in this conversation, and that's exactly what I was hoping to achieve with this agenda item is that, first off, I think Paul's original suggestion going back to when he kicked off this topic of making sure that the other stakeholder groups and constituencies follow the BC's example and put, some sort of a formal consensus statement towards the GNSO. I think that we should ask each of the leaderships of the SGs and Cs to do that and to help us inform this in addition to and alongside of the examination of this question in the context of the PDP. Phil, I think, has identified some key dependencies not only with the subsequent procedures, but also the review of the RPMs, and then the review team associated with the consumer trust. I think Rubens and Susan have noted some other reviews that are either ongoing or starting that may also be relevant to addressing the board's question. I think Donna and Tony as well. I think raised some practical concerns about, and I'm going to shoot from the hip here a little bit, so I certainly don't want to attribute these thoughts to them because I don't know that I've captured them, but something along the lines of, can we be working on some of these things while an application period is open? Can we be continuing, which items are on the workstream one critical path, if you will, and which items can be addressed on the fly as we go? And while that sounds ad hoc, it's probably worth remembering that we are still here in 2016, towards the end of 2016, working on things that affect applications that were applied for in 2012. So it's not like the opening of an application window is the end of a process. It's actually the beginning of another lengthy window that gives us the opportunity to continue to address these matters. So which of these have to be done before that window opens, which have to be, can be done during, which can be done after, and I think that's generally what the board is asking us to do is sequence this out for us here and show us how all of these parts inform each other and fit together. So that's generally what I took away from this conversation. I thought it was a helpful and constructive discussion. I do note, however, that we are on the hook to provide a response in a relatively timely manner, so let's boil this down to some action items. I think first and foremost, if we could ask staff and counselors to identify someone from each stakeholder group and constituency that will take this back to their respective groups and work on developing a statement that conform somewhat to the model that we heard from the BC and also from the ALAC, and try to bring that to the council list as soon as possible, but certainly not any later than the document cutoff for our next meeting later in September. So if there are no objections, we can set that as a deadline for that particular piece of homework and have everyone else go out and collect those informations. And then we will also, in parallel, pursue a similar course with the subsequent procedures PDP. I noticed so we've got a couple of folks joining the queue. Oh, Donna's okay. Susan, go ahead.
Just a question to clarify. So, what is the timeline? I'm not seeing this as a short timeline.
Sorry, Susan. I think maybe I probably glossed over that a little too quickly. We were concerned that we had to have something resolved on this particular call, and we've since learned that that I believe that it is the board's intention to have a discussion, a community discussion on this topic in Hyderabad. So we should have a response to the board well in advance of Hyderabad. Just, you know, shooting from the hip here, that looks at early to late September in our next meeting, which I believe is September 29th, or something that we can present outside of a meeting, we can present to the board in early October.
So there wouldn't, you know, that seems very short, but so we wouldn't have the opportunity to talk to the, discuss this with the board our first day of meetings in India, and then they could discuss with the community.
I don't think it's necessarily an either or, Susan. Okay. I think we can certainly do both.
Okay.
But I think that we, you know, to the point of the letter, we've been asked to do something fairly specifically to allow the board to prepare for that session in India, and I think that we should work to equip them with our thoughts so that they can hold those sessions in India.
Okay.
But I think, you know, this is going to be ongoing. I think if we can get some feedback from the stakeholder groups, the constituencies, the GNSO Council, synthesize all those up, even, you know, stitch them together with the responses we're getting from the PDPs, all of that can be fodder for the discussion in Hyderabad. Okay, but thank you again for everyone. I thought that was a constructive conversation. We have 17 minutes until Heather's weekend begins, so let's see if we can plow through some of the rest of these agenda items. Item number 8, council discussion on proposed cost control mechanisms and the validation of the budget for the CCWG accountability and the ongoing work there. Just a note that I think we should thank staff, not just the GNSO staff, but also the ICANN executive staff, CCWG co-chairs, and the office of the CFO for holding that webinar. I note that a number of counselors and other members of the GNSO community were able to attend that webinar, and I thought it was very informative and helpful. And I note that a number of the folks who attended that webinar raised some fairly thoughtful questions, and it was a good discussion. So, you know what? I did skip number 7. Sorry, Ruben. My apologies. We'll circle back to that one. I apologize for jumping ahead. Wishful thinking on my part. I just wanted to note that we are at some point going to be asked to approve the budget that includes the cost control mechanisms for the ongoing work of CCWG accountability. I think one of the biggest items that was discussed most extensively, and probably because it was one of the largest cost drivers of the CCWG work, was the legal committee that was established and proposed. But if anyone has any thoughts on that session, the webinar, any of the topics that were raised in that session, or any recommendations on how, or proposals on how the council should go forward, or anything else that we need before we would consider approving that those cost control mechanisms and that ongoing budget, we can open up that discussion now. Okay, so I have a queue. I have Paul and Ed. Paul, you're up first.
Thanks, James. Paul McGrady here. So I guess what I took away primarily from that webinar was that if there is serious consideration of reopening up ICANN's formation of jurisdiction in the jurisdiction workstream 2, that this budget's woefully inadequate for that. I mean, it took millions and millions of dollars to settle on California where we already were. And so I'm wondering, if we're asked to approve it, do we approve it subject to an understanding that that issue will not be reopened? Because if it is, this is not enough. I mean, should we be affirmative in stating as a council that we feel satisfied that Workstream 1 should not be overturned by changing the jurisdictional form, you know, the formation jurisdiction? I think it's sort of asking us to approve this sort of forces that question out. I think it would be appropriate for us to say that we don't think Workstream 1 should be overturned by looking at the jurisdiction formation issue, and that the jurisdiction sub-team should look at things that are, you know, important but not necessarily that question. So I just throw that out as an open-ended question, since the approval process will force us to look at that, the legal budget, and say whether or not it's sufficient. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. And I remember you're raising that during the webinar, and I apologize. I neglected to cover that in my summary. I came away feeling a little bit better, at least from listening to Thomas and some of the co-chairs, that wasn't within the scope of what Workstream 2 was tasked to do. But to your point, if we need to use the approval process to fiscally constrain that work to limit that jurisdiction question, then we should consider doing so. Ed, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks, James. Paul's right. If we're going to change jurisdiction at this point, Lord, you're looking at never $5-6 million in legal expenses alone. Never 6 months. There's no question about that. I don't see that as a likely outcome, but if it were to happen, this whole thing has to be torn up. I do have a few concerns. And by the way, the webinar was excellent, and thanks to everybody who organized it. Travel is a concern for me, and particularly those of us who are actually doing the work in Workstream 2. 20 slots, period, and they're going only to members. Now, members were those who were appointed by the organization. But when I look at the people doing the work and I look at the members, there is some overlap, but not a great deal. So we're actually going to have a situation where the reporters, the ones who are organizing the subgroups, will not be at the face-to-face meetings unless they have other forms of support, whereas members, some of whom aren't even active in Workstream 2, are getting support. I think that's not the way we should go. I think we should at least let the tri-chairs know that that's something they should look at again. I'm a bit concerned about the lack of support for staff expenditures. When I delved into the numbers, we're looking at the equivalent of about $808,000 for staff support for Workstream 2, as compared to $1.7 million for staff support for transition implementation. Now, I'm already experiencing some of the lack of staff support. As a reporter for the CEP group, I got my staff report 3 weeks late, and it's horrid. I mean, I know on council we're spoiled with our great staff, but I got something that was outdated and is about a year old, and I've sent it back. And that's a concern. I can speak a little bit more clearly to the legal expenses. We're budgeted at $1.4 million, which is about 13% of what we spent in Workstream 1. Now, we have resurrected the legal executive, which I'm on. There's seven of us on it. We hired the firms, and I think it's a good group of people that work well together, and this is a good thing. However, they are restricting us in what we can do. One of my concerns there is they have Sidley almost as a project manager. So when we do make a response, I would suggest that we ask them to reconsider that and put it back in the hands of the legal committee where it was. And here's the reason for this. The lead counsel on Sidley bills us at about $1,250 an hour. These are public records. The named counsel at Adler bills us at $625 an hour. I would like us to have the ability, with the budgetary constraints we're under, to send the questions to the most cost-efficient independent counsel. We're also being told to use ICON in-house in Jones Day where appropriate. Knowing the folks on the legal committee, I doubt we're going to find that appropriate very often. One last point about the $1.4 million, which I thought was quite unusual. That is the total amount for legal expenditure we're budgeted for the entire Workstream 2 project. Now, what's unusual about this is Workstream 2 is going to be conducted over two fiscal years, fiscal year 17 and fiscal year 18. We only have $1.4 million for both fiscal years, which, you know, Barry and Marika told me a lot when I was doing the budget letter for us earlier this year. I can't recall another project of ICON that has a budget spanning 2 years. So one of the things I think we should suggest, given our concern that it's not enough money, is to suggest that that $1.4 million is what we have available for fiscal year 17. We revisit the issue for fiscal year 18 as the time comes. Thanks so much, James.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate your comments, and I know that you're very close to a lot of these issues, like a number of other folks, but appreciate the specifics on that. Just noting the time here, we have 8 minutes remaining. We have a couple of other items to go, so I put myself in the queue just more as a bookend here, but Phil, you're up next.
Thanks, James. Phil Corwin for the record. Yeah, I was on that webinar, too, and let me state, these are personal views. I'm all in favor of working within a reasonable budget and not spending money unnecessarily. Having said that, I have to observe the issues being addressed in Workstream 2 are not issues that are less important than the ones that were addressed in Workstream 1. They're simply issues that didn't have to be resolved prior to the IANA transition. Many of them are very important issues regarding staff accountability, board accountability, increased transparency of the organization. And frankly, those are issues where I wouldn't be comfortable relying on Jones Day or in-house legal staff just to make sure you're getting a fully a comprehensive and impartial advice. I think the Lawyers Committee may feel the same way based on what Ed just said. I think it's fine to have a Lawyers Committee vetting this stuff. I'm basically concerned that 10% of what was spent on the Workstream 1 issues is unreasonably low. I'm also concerned that even if that $1.4 million is expended and the Lawyers Committee recommends allocating additional amounts, that the final decision on whether there will be any more money allocated to additional legal advice is for the board, which is the group that is we're most focused on in terms of accountability. So I have some real problems. And finally, in regard to $1,250 an hour billing rates, I'm sure they're giving excellent advice for that money, but that's an extremely, high, very top of the chart hourly rate. And in this day and age, for this level and volume of work, organizations generally negotiate rates which work out to considerably under the hourly rate, and if ICANN is paying $12.50 an hour, then somebody needs to negotiate better with the law firms. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And I think you're correct to point out that really it's legal costs are a significant driver for the overall budget. Okay, I put myself in the end of the queue here because I, unfortunately, due to time constraints, we're going to have to saw off the discussion here. We have a number of folks that are going to drop at the top of the hour, and I'm worried, in fact, that we might lose quorum. So gives us about 5 minutes. I skipped number seven. It was an accident at the time, but now it's intentional. We're probably not going to have a moment to circle back on that, but that is a review of the Cross-Community Working Group on Internet Governance. And just a note that we will be asked, I believe, in Hyderabad to re-charter or consider re-chartering that group or perhaps converting it into something else. The item number eight, which we just discussed, there's item number nine, which is planning and scheduling for Hyderabad. Heather made some good proposals to change the approach that we have to scheduling GNSO sessions. So thank you for kicking that off, Heather. I think that was very helpful. Wolf Ulrich and others, I think, weighed in as well. I put some ideas or some bullet points there, and it doesn't seem to be any objections, but if you have additional thoughts or concerns, please respond to that thread. Otherwise, we will proceed accordingly. But otherwise, I would say for planning, make sure you are starting the visa application process, because all indications are that that is a real bear and take some time to navigate getting through that. And if we run into areas where we need assistance from the travel or meetings team, then perhaps we can liaise through GNSO staff and Glenn to make sure that we get the necessary documentation. I'm saying that with an eye to Carlos's recent post on the list. So that brings us to AOB in 3 minutes. Just a note that we do have that note from Krista Spain regarding the status of IGO acronyms. The note references that there will be upcoming, there will be a proposal forthcoming. We have are still awaiting that proposal, but I think it's fair to say we could expect that in advance of our next meeting, so be on the lookout for that, and certainly feel free to kick off a discussion on the mailing list if you'd like to discuss the specifics of Chris's note. We have open liaisons that we've also discussed, and I think that there was a good proposal from, I believe, if memory serves, that was Amr, about opening that up not only to current counselors but to incoming counselors who will be coming after, who will be seated in Hyderabad, and I think that's a good point. We have a timeline coming up for chair and vice chair elections, which, yay, we get to do that again. And that will happen in ICANN 57, so we'll start that, we'll take that to the list and make sure that that timeline is posted and published. And then I believe it was Phil that wanted to discuss AOB item number 10.4, which is proposed measures for the two-letter labels that would be released. Okay, so I have a queue here. I think, Ed, is that an old hand? If so, if you wouldn't mind clearing that. I have a couple of minutes here for Marilia and Phil, and I certainly want to give you both an opportunity to speak before we start to lose counselors. So please be mindful of that. And Marilia, go ahead.
Thank you, James. This is Marilia speaking. I will be very quick. It's just about point seven that we sort of skipped. I think that the CWG on Internet Governance has appeared in the agenda of the Council several times, and I personally fail to understand what we are looking at here. If we are looking for specific on the Charter, or if the Council wants to review the Charter, I think that we should be clear about which are these points, so we can convey this to the chair and the co-chair of the CWG so they can internally discuss and present their views on the issue as well. I think that we are inviting them over and over again. We are lucky to have Olier as a like liaison in any case, but I think that we are sort of raising the discussion without getting anywhere. It would be good if we can formulate our concerns or our requests more clearly. Thanks.
Thank you, Marilia. And to be clear, I think that here it was a discussion point for to review. We last had an update from this group in Helsinki, and we will have to consider the charter in Hyderabad. So in the intervening council meetings, it's showing up as a discussion item. And so nothing specific, I think, is being asked except to discuss and give our councillors an opportunity to raise questions. But thank you for that point. I think it is good to remind ourselves to be specific. Phil, you're up.
Thanks, James. Phil, for the record. Quickly on 10-4, we can take that to the email list. I just want to better understand the process and make sure that we're not having a staff-created policy where there should be a GNSO-created policy for two-letter treatment of two-letter, second-level names at GTLDs. On 10-1, I've previously expressed my concern that this board subgroup has been meeting for nearly 2 years with a GAC IGO small group and has had no similar closed-door meetings with anyone from the GNSO when they're trying to resolve a conflict between GNSO advice and GAC advice. On whatever specifics that are coming from them, I just want to note that in 2 hours, I will be co-chairing a call of the working group on curative rights processes for IGOs, and we're today beginning our work on our final report and recommendation. So if that board group has anything to tell us, they better tell us soon if they want us to consider it all. We've been waiting for more than a year. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. And that is a good point. Donna, you're up next.
Thanks, James. Donna Austin. So, Phil, on the two-character issue, I have a very good understanding of the process that has been developed over the last 2 years. I'm not sure that it falls into the category of, you know, staff developing policy, but if you could, on the list, explain why you think or you fear that is the case, that would be helpful, and then we can continue the discussion from then. This process on two characters has changed course a number of times, and ultimately the reason being because of a number of interventions from the GAC along the path of the last 2 years. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. Okay, so we have a couple of items here that folks have noted that they will raise on the list, and I would ask them both to please do that quickly while it's fresh in mind for everyone else, and for others that want to weigh in on those items, please do so on the list. I take Amr's point that we've deferred the CCWGIG twice now, so we will move it up a little bit higher in the agenda so that it benefits the time, and I do apologize again for skipping it this time. You know, just another final parting note here before we let everybody go, that we can take as many of these items to the list, and I think we should encourage folks to raise these items and discuss them on the list so that we can maximize our time on the calls, which is a little more scarce. So with that, I would ask if there are any other points of order here. Otherwise, we can adjourn this particular call and take these items to the list with an updated action item from staff to come. Okay, seeing the queue is clear. Thank you, everyone, for your time, particularly those who woke up very, very early, and for those like Heather who stayed up very, very late. Certainly appreciate everyone accommodating this this schedule, and we'll look for your comments on the list and talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Have a good one.